Hey, everybody. I'm Jane.
And I'm Sarah.
And you're listening to the Medium Curious podcast, where we're putting the what? The wonderful in woe. What are we doing?
We're making the woo wonderful.
Thank you.
And on today's episode, it is Medium Creative, where we talk about channeled creativity with Jane's great friend, Adam Barr.
Adam Barr, four-time Emmy nominee, winner of an Emmy, gem of a human being, one of my favorite people on earth, and just a ridiculously talented, just been a, you know, badass creative in Hollywood for a really long time, but he's also been my dear friend in the woo and the wonderful. So you want to meet him, Sarah?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
Well, hi, Adam.
Hi, everybody.
Thanks for being here. Jane told me so much about you.
She told me
yesterday that we're going to be interviewing an Emmy Award winning writer and executive producer. And yeah.
Have you seen him?
they're in the neighborhood somewhere. Yeah, I got a trophy on that shelf from a few years ago, which was a lot of fun. Looking to add. I think it wants company up there, so I'm doing my best.
A little bit lonely, that little Emmy.
But thanks for having me. Yeah, I've been such a cheerleader of what you both have been doing for since it was just sort of a germ of an idea. I heard from Jane so long ago, and here you are. I love every second of your podcast. I just the day it comes out, I'm there. It's great. It's so great.
Well, I got to tell you that there's been so many times where like, ask Adam, check with Adam, see what Adam says.
It's so true. It wasn't until we started talking about having you on that we realized that you're like a little bit of a godfather of this podcast, because it's true. It's like, do we like the name? I don't know. I'll ask Adam. Do we like the, and then you introduced us to Eric, who made our logo. So
it's so fun, isn't it? That creative process is so fun, just to collaborate and get other people to kind of weigh in that you trust and sort of turn your thinking a different way. I love it. I'm a huge fan of working solo, but balanced with working with other people. It's just better. It's just more fun.
Yeah, that co-creation.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, that's the topic of our podcast today. So that's beautiful. And it's perfect that you call it co-creation, because I think that's what we want to talk about, right? Like we want to talk about the creative process, but wondering, questioning, opening to the idea that maybe it's not just one little human sitting at a keyboard. So what do you think about that, Adam? Do you think that there's some kind of spirit that comes in when you're writing your Emmy award-winning shows? Or what do you think? How many times can I just drop that in here? It won't be the last.
Well, I mean, that's, you're just leading me to the only answer there is.
I am always very leading. Yeah. I'm learning how to do this.
I mean, all three of us are all creative in that sense. I mean, everyone's creative, but the three of us actually, you know, within the arts, the performative arts, the creation, the production of arts and all that. So we know really well. Yeah, I have my own ritual. I have a ritual of sounds. There's bowls. I have prayer beads. And I have a prayer, a little meditation where I call in my creative team to co-create. And that's the thing. Let me be a vessel for my highest good and the highest good of all. And guide me, show me the way. Let's co-create. Let's make something great together. You know, so
I'm getting chills. I love it.
When so the truth comes the in, shorter I'm answer is yes. But do you guys do that? I mean, I know like Sarah, you started even our little chat now with sort of a prayer, which is basically a co-creation of sorts, right? Or
yeah, definitely. I mean, I know for all of my readings, I definitely spend time before each of them tuning into that energy. But it's kind of like for me that merging into, I've talked about this before, like the greater consciousness.
Yeah.
Like everything that is that field of magic, you know? And I think that's a little bit how I think of it, especially for readings, but also, I mean, I think is being a musician too. I think that's my creative outlet. But yeah. I can only imagine for writing, that's how that would work as well.
I love how intentional you are about it, Adam. That's always inspired me. I met you, gosh, I want to say 15, 16 years ago. Mm. And when we first met, you know, I knew that you were cool just because of talking to you and you're so funny and all that. I didn't actually know that you like were the EP and a big deal at Will and Grace. It's just really fun when you live in LA and like people have these huge careers and you don't even know because you just know them from the cool guy that you walk the hill with. Right. But I was
one of a lot of people.
Yeah, you're part of the Kim crowd. We just, episodes now. We talked to Kim on the Hill and you're Adam on the Hill. And, but what I want to say is that intentional way that you walk in through the door of creativity is so beautiful to me. And even though I write as well and I don't do all of those rituals, I definitely do them with mediumship. Like, I mean, I turn around three times, I shake my butt. I do a lot of like very specific, talk to this Northwest, South, you know. I have a lot that I do, but I love hearing about how you do it for writing and that.
Yeah. I don't do it. You know, I'm still perfecting it. Right. I mean, and this is a big theme of everything you talk about. I mean, saying that what I did sounds really lovely and evolved, but there are definitely a lot of days where I haven't done that because I've dropped the kid off and I took the dog and I had to clean the dog and I had to feed the cat and I had to go to the market, damn it, and everything. And I come up and I just need to write. I need to get up here. And I jump in and the transition to flow, to getting into a zone is a little harder. And it's not till later I realize I should have, maybe I'll do that now, you know? So it's not every day. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I envy the two of you because you are mediums. So you hear, you see, you can, you know, your channels are so open. Whereas, you know, for us mere mortals, you know, I have all these tools. Like, so I pendulum a lot and I've really come to sort of trust that and also trust me. Like sometimes it'll pendulum and I'll get sort of some clues on a direction or something here and there, either with my life or with my work. And I'll still sort of not fight it, but sort of say, thanks. Let me go down this path for a minute. So I'm learning too, but I have those tools and other tricks I try, but I envy where you two are. Cause you can tune in a different way.
I kind of feel like it's all the same stuff though. I mean, that I was talking to Jane today about like when ideas pop into your head, you know, what ideas are actually ours and what ideas come from other sources, you know, like how do we really know, you know? And I think a lot of stuff that's out there, great art, a lot of, you know, music, a lot of writing, great literature. It's like where sometimes there's some similar threads in there where you can just feel that it's channeled, that it's from a greater source.
I know. And what I see, that is such a juicy topic for me because it sounds like you both are into that too. What fascinates me most is when you look at all the greats throughout history in the world of art and writing and music, you know, especially you go back in time when it was all sort of church centered, everyone is talking about divine inspiration.
That's true. And
so many more, if you dig deep, talk about beyond just God, but something a little more, you know, supernatural. You know, there's this quote that I love, this French poet and philosopher, Paul Valéry, who was he died in 1945, and he was a great thinker, and he had this quote that the gods kindly offer us the first verse. What is difficult is to write the next ones, which are worthy of their supernatural brother.
Oh.
So he was, and I always love that. It's like, Yeah. So God's divine source, universal truth, whatever that source is going to gift you with.
You get some, one.
Some nugget. Yeah. And then.
Get you your little push.
That's right.
And get then, you out the door.
Yeah. Out the door. And after that, you get to.
You got to pedal.
Find your own way. Yeah. You got to do the work. You got to do the work.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. I want to tell you a really quick story that just jumped to mind. I used to go to the Art Institute of Chicago. Every time I came through Chicago, I used to do this other job that was super weird, but I traveled a lot. And there was this one Monet painting and I knew where it was. I'd come around the corner and it would just make me burst into tears. No matter what my interstate was, no matter what the day was, whatever, it just seeing it just would like blow up my whole like spirit and tears would spring out of my face. And then it became like a joke with my husband. I'd be like, let's see if it happens. Like it just like, it just punched
me. Isn't that like, that's the bar for like great art when it can just make you feel and just make you move you to tears. Yeah. I mean, music does that.
I was just going to say.
What does it for you? Just to nerd out for a minute, Sarah.
Oh, like,
what piece does it for you?
So Brahms or Mahler or one of those big, huge orchestral pieces where you listen to it and it can just start with just like the simplest note and then note, like other instruments will be added. And before I know it, like tears just running down my face. And it's not any thought that's going through my mind. There's no scenario or there's no imaginary story going along with it. It's just the way the music is that touches me in my heart that just makes me bawl.
And like, yeah.
And like making like, me cry right now.
Or like the harp violin concerto, the second movement of that, I can listen to that and just like within a second be moved to tears.
Yeah.
And it's not sadness. It's wonder. Just so, it's wonder. I don't even know how to put that to words. I'm not a writer. And
so go ahead, Adam.
Put that to words for us, Adam.
Well, it's crazy. You know, I only know about you, Sarah, from everything, of course, Jane said, and I know your music training and your music background. And so you say Brahms, that's my passion project that I've been wanting to, I feel like my whole life I've been preparing to do this, a 10-part limited series about the relationship Brahms had with Robert Schumann and Clara Schumann, who was, for people who don't know, Clara was arguably the, and this directly has to do with what we're talking about, Clara Schumann was arguably the most famous woman in classical music. She was a piano virtuoso in the 1800s. She fell in love with her father's student, Robert Schumann. They had a love affair forever. The father tried to stop it. They sued in court to get the right to do it. She composed, she edited all his journals. She was the champion of his music. And he was in mental decline when a young 20-year-old handsome guy named Johannes Brahms shows up at their door. And their whole life changes. And Brahms and Clara had this sort of love that maybe they hooked up, maybe they don't. We don't know. But for 50 years, they sort of tortured each other because they were both had a lot of childhood damage. Anyway, spiritualism was a big part of their little clique, their salon, because Schumann, his favorite activity was seances, which he called table tapping, where it was very much in vogue in those days. But he was so enamored of it because he was convinced that he believed he was getting tunes and melodies from Franz Schubert. And
I'm getting chills like crazy right
and,
now.
And Schumann was, you know, he was manic. He had a, you know, he had a mental degenerative mental disorder and eventually very tragically died in asylum in his last 2 years of his life. But like the last piece he wrote in this mania was, he called it, in the German name translates to ghost variations, because he was hearing these Schubert angels, they were giving him the tune.
Wow.
And he would go and he would write like feverishly. He'd disappear for 3 days or a week and boom, he was that gifted. So you talk about, you mentioned Brahms. That was it for me as a kid. I studied piano. I had a really wonderful teacher who opened all these doors for me. But early on, the piece that always did it for me, and here you can get a little nerdy, but it was Brahms' Second Piano Concerto, which my teacher gave me this one recording of my favorite pianist. And that's the one for me, those opening sounds of the horn. And I hear it. I'm thinking about it now. And the tears
you can cry. Yeah.
It's so sublime. And
it is
now,
sublime.
As an adult reading, you know, I've studied, I've got a shelf full of books over there, which no one on a podcast can see me pointing, but it's over there. And now studying Brahms, I know the context out of which that came, you know, his life and how he was wired and the environment he was in and his love and all this stuff. And it's so cool. It's just so cool.
That I didn't actually know about that. I didn't know table tapping.
They called it table tapping. Yeah.
So what was that?
Well, that was he, you know, get a few people around. He had a room and they had a room in their house with a table. And Schumann would, you know, they would invite in spirit, or also it was sort of fun. They'd have some drinks and see what could happen. And he would, when he would get a melody, he would be tapping the table. And then he would go off and he'd write it. And then you'd get this phenomenal work.
Oh, that's so cool.
Isn't that cool?
I had no idea. They didn't teach us that in music school.
No.
How weird.
No.
How weird.
What do you do with that? How do you apply that? That's not going to get you a job.
Everybody's got a table.
The table tapping course in music composition. Table tapping 101.
I'll add one more as for the ghost story part of this, which is there was a woman in my life, an older woman who was a counselor and a healer. She channeled a very off-the-grid, progressive man who taught her in this lifetime here in Los Angeles, along with some other healing entities. And she was kooky, but I worked with her for several years ago. She passed 2 years ago. And while I was deep in this project, reading, researching, writing, you know, preparing the whole thing, figuring out what the story is, I had a session with her, and all of a sudden she starts. Now, she was an older woman, kind of frail. She needed help standing up. She started doing this. And I was like, what are you doing?
Inducting?
She says, I don't know. She said, I don't know. Hold on. I'm figuring it out. Cause she would see spirit come to her. Sometimes my father, sometimes my grandfather, and she didn't know. She'd have to describe them. Right. And then we kind of puzzle it out. So she started doing that.
So listeners, right now, he's conducting.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I forget. We're not on TV. Waving her arms in sort of a conductor's rhythm. And she said, I'm seeing someone. He's tall and would describe him. And, you know, Schumann had a pretty distinctive look, wavy hair, light blonde hair. He was tall. He's sort of, certain features. And said, it's conducting. He's conducting. And then I'd say, is it Robert Schumann? She said, I think so. Schumann. And on my phone, I would find an old picture. I said, this. Uh-huh. She said, and she lost her shit. She went, oh my God. That's
wow.
It. He's come. And he reappeared a couple other times. And then this became a bit of a tool, a workable tool for me, where she said, when you're ready, when you want some guidance on this project, because he's here and there are others with him who are very interested in what you're doing, we'll do that. We'll ask, we'll start a conversation, and she could do that with him, with them, and see what they want to say. And, you know, we never got to that because she eventually passed and all that. But
my mind is
so
moving in a million, million directions right now.
What do you think of that? What do you think of all that?
Well, that really resonates for me. For some reason, I've had that thought. I've had the thought that for everybody who's tuned in and connected, especially with composers, a lot of times you'll hear things in pieces that will sound reminiscent of a composer of the past. Now, I know a lot of people will compose in the style of, or it'll just be there organically, but I really do feel like that spirit comes in and moves through someone who's composing that. So that doesn't honestly surprise me. Actually, none of this surprised me. I just think it's really fun and amazing. And so what I was experiencing physically while you were telling me this was huge body chills, like just affirmation for me that this is what was going on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you both in such a wonderful way talk about tuning in, knowing, and the doubt of it all. Right. And you both operate at a much higher level, you know, and I'm just me trying to develop my gut, my intuitive sense. And in that moment, yeah, it seemed undeniable because all my, this whole, I was just consumed with this subject. I'm obviously listening to the music round the clock. I'm talking about it, I'm reading, I'm studying, I'm writing. But was it real? Where did that come from? Was she was a little kooky? Was she nuts? all this stuff about Schumann, he was in mental decline. Was that real? Or is this sort of open, this receiving, this open, the channel that he was, did that sort of make him unstable? And he didn't have any support back then. Mm. You know, all these questions, which are really cool. And
yeah. And super important to kind of talk about. I mean, this idea of opening to other realms. There is, in the tradition I studied that I mentioned earlier on this podcast in Berkeley, and you know a lot about this, Adam, because I tell you all about my energy class. She was really adamant that we needed to be very careful with our little bodies and just very much protect, you know, our bodies, our minds, our sort of own energy fields, and really not like be overly protective and just ensure that there's not other energies that are entering our field. To your point, you know, like they were very open. They were maybe just always in channel. You know, it sounds like that woman that you worked with, she was like, really constantly getting information. But there's being in this third dimension on Earth, we have to be in our bodies. We have to do our damn dishes. We have to, you know, like put our feet in Earth. Like we have to really keep the vehicle that we're driving tuned up. So like my mentor recently said that to me. She's like, did you stop working out? I was like, I did, because I've been like a gym chick for a while, which is not me. And it was feeling really good. And she tuned in and she goes, you stopped working out. You got to get back in there, because the reason being is that this little, it's like the tuner. This body is a tuner. And, and she was like, you're losing capacity. Your channel can't be as open. You're going to lose capacity if the body becomes and it's almost the way I'm being shown. It's almost like, you know, there's just right angles where there shouldn't be, or, you know, you just want that clear channel. So we have to pay super close attention and be really precise about, you know, and Sarah talks about this a lot, you know, we close the door, we open the door, we just really protect our safety.
Being open all the time. So I was thinking about this morning, and, you know, a lot of times when we're doing this work and a lot of our teachers talk about grounding. Mm-hmm. So for me, that means being very solid in my embodiment, being very solid in my body, knowing that I am here in this body right now, in this present moment.
Yes.
Right.
So that I'm not like way off in the ethers, and that I'm firmly attached to this earth as a human in this body right now. So just thinking about grounding, like as I'm thinking about that story you were just telling me about Schumann and how he suffered and we weren't quite sure of his mental state. I mean, like what kind of, like I'm just imagining or sensing that there wasn't that groundedness. And I think a lot of people who are very creative, who are sensitive, who have just these great talents of imagination and the ability to channel, I do feel like it is harder to be grounded because there is such the propensity to float off into the ethers. So,
absolutely. I feel that. I'm sure you tell me if you do too. Yeah, I feel that all the time. It's fun to play up there. I've done my share of meditation, been on meditation retreats over the years. And when I get into that zone, I remember the first time I went on this retreat up in Michigan from this woman. I heard an interview with her on the radio, and she was a channel. She would channel this incredible wind, and she offered these retreats. And I said, I'm in. It sounds as crazy as it could be. So I'm going. And I remember the first time I really sat and meditated with her. I had this incredible experience. It was so high up. It was so out of my body. And I never experienced anything like that. And I told her about it. And she said, well, you've done this before. You know, in another lifetime, which was sort of a new cool thought to me. But out of that came exactly what you're talking about, this thought of, okay, it's fun to play in that space. And yeah, as a creative, it's like, wow, I'll welcome an idea from wherever it comes from. But there's you gotta act responsibly. And it took me a while to learn that. I had to ground myself because I could float away. You know?
Yeah. So what do you do to ground yourself?
What do I do? Well, we live right near Griffith Park in LA. So I'm out there all the time with my dog. My wife and I will do that. Or if we can drag our 13-year-old ever, you know, out of her bedroom, she'll come with us. But I'm up there with the dog a lot. It's just gorgeous. And, you know, Jane, you lived on that hill for years and years too. We were there together in the years you were in LA. To me, that's really grounding. Mm. I hang out in the forest. I really get my feet on the ground. But a lot, you know, I've worked with enough people over the years. I also have some techniques to do it in terms of sort of sitting with a straight back, breathing, getting centered, and visualization helps me, picturing sort of my, you know, chakra centers sort of spinning in at a certain rate in a certain direction, but with a like roots down into the ground. Even if I'm up here, my little office is like upstairs in the house, but that doesn't matter. It goes into the ground. A lot of times I'll stomp my feet. You know, I had one healer say, like, have a piece of chocolate or a piece of meat. You know, even a bite was really grounding. And I can do that too sometimes. So, yeah, if I get too floaty, which I tend to do, I kind of reach for something like that.
Oh, that explains my problem with chocolate.
I just had a little piece right before this call.
There you go.
The entire month of February, Sarah and I were doing this really cool thing called psychic sit-ups. And we're going to have the women who run that on the podcast later. But it's like two times a week, two times a day, you can go on and practice. And they've got hundreds of people, or I don't even know how many people. It was huge. And all of that practice required a lot of chocolate.
Really? That's crazy. That's great.
It's so great. Yeah. We'll talk more about it when they come on. But it's just,
I want to hear.
It's so helpful. It's just like going to the gym, right? It's like the psychic medium gym. They do psychic one day, and the other day of the week you do medium sit-ups. So funny.
Awesome.
But I wanted to bring something up just when you brought up your daughter. I remember that you were actually one of the very first people I ever gave a reading to, Adam. I just remembered that.
Really?
Do you remember the baby reading?
Oh, man, I just got a crazy shiver. Yes, before she was even conceived.
Right.
You did. Was it you?
Yeah.
And you described her, right? Her spirit and sort of her look. Is that,
was me.
Was that part of it?
Yeah. Your face.
Oh my God.
I had forgotten completely until you said, get her out of the bedroom. And then I all of a sudden saw the three of us in your living room. And I was, so for whatever reason, Sarah, I found it easier to channel the babies
to come.
The spirit babies.
Babies on their way.
Yeah. Like they are very easy to contact.
So yeah, I've had that happen too. Yeah.
Have you?
So cool.
They're so amazing. They're kind of in this other, they're kind of in their own field. And I read that book by Walter, Spirit Babies, whatever Walter's last name is, except with an M. Anyway. And I was like, I can do this. And so I did it for you and then two other friends, and they each brought through twins and you brought through one. So anyway.
Oh man, I'm so glad you told me that, because I knew we got it somewhere and I forgot. And that was at a time too. We had Zoe later in life because we had some fertility issues. We couldn't figure it out. And we were working with all kinds of people and even Western and Eastern. And it was taking us years. It was taking us a long time to conceive, and we couldn't quite figure it out. And then you came along with that, and then after that, everything happened naturally. You know, we didn't have to do all the drugs or IVF. Any of that happened in a little window, a little pocket.
Oh,
So that's so.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh, that's so cool. That is so cool.
Yeah, I was like, she's very spunky. She's very sassy. I remember saying that to you.
Yeah, she's sassy.
Wow. Well,
but she's really intuitive too. I mean, she has. We do exercises. We play games. The three.
Oh,
of us.
I want to hear. I play with my kids too. I want to hear what games you play.
What do you do?
Well, I did a coin toss game with my one kid where he would toss a coin and then I'd tell him to project the image of the coin, heads or tails, right here in his third eye.
Right.
And I think we hit like 20 in a row where we got it right.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, How old was he when you did that?
Probably like 10, 11. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we did some games with some other things where the best one was where he said, okay, I've got an image in my head. Tell me what it is.
Yeah.
And I was like, a rhinoceros. And he went and grabbed a drawing of a rhinoceros that he had drawn.
Yep.
And I was like, that's what I was seeing. But it only worked if he was projecting it in the image in his head. So it was like, I was looking at what he was projecting to me.
So we do all that same stuff too. But let me ask you, because she receives my images better than I get hers. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll get her, and Sherry, they have their own dynamic too. But did you find it that way? That
I think it was pretty even both ways. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, she's really intuitive, isn't she?
Yeah, deeply sensitive, really empathetic, and she has this intuitive quality for sure. This talent that we noticed early on, and so we kept doing these exercises. But
yeah,
we haven't done it for a little while.
I think that's great. Yeah. I mean, Gene and I were talking about kids these days because we're all parents, you know, and what's important for our kids to know these days is discernment and being able to tap into your intuition and knowing what to trust, because with technology and the bombardment of all this information, because we have access to all kinds of information that we never had access to as kids.
Right.
They need to be able to decipher what feels right, what feels true, what resonates, you know,
in terms of information, but and also people.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Yep. Oh, I talk about that. Sherry, my wife and I talk about that with her a lot. Like, when you meet someone, when you're around someone, what are you feeling? Are you getting are you getting a little nauseous? You get a little ill? You know, what's maybe a sign to not engage, to take a step away outside their field? Or what's so sort good. Of tingling and making you smile? And maybe you can lean in a bit more, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, we talk about that here too, but it's mostly because it's like, you know, like it's simple, but like the reviews on Home Depot, we might be remodeling our bathroom. And
that's so good.
And then I'm like, fake, real, fake, yeah, fake. And then that's a game my son and I play. And he's,
oh, that's a great game.
And smart. Then the other one we play a lot is what time is it? And he always gets within 3 minutes, even if he hasn't looked at a clock in hours. Oh, that's a really nice one to measure, because it's, you know, it's something that you can really feel into the field of time. Or yeah, I just do it all the time. I drive him nuts. I'm like, who's okay, who just called? What da-da-da-da-da-da. And lately now, because of course I've switched careers and now he's looking at me a little sideways. The other day I go, oh, you gotta pick up the phone, you know, your friend so and so is on. And he was like, stop it, mom.
She's a witch.
But you know what? He's pretty open and accepting, actually, considering. Yeah. Yeah. Once we were on Spotify, he's like, you're all right.
Yeah.
He made the cut. Made the cool cut.
Yeah.
Not so cringe.
Yeah. So cringe.
That's what I hear all the time. Dad, stop. It's cringe.
That's cringe.
Oh.
The creative spark led to Brahms, led to, I can't wait for your project, Adam. Like, I can see it.
So
already
what's
done.
Going on with that now?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I wrote it. I was on the reboot of Will and Grace, which finished up in 2019. And by then I was deep into, I'd been like a year into reading, research, outlining. Like, I could turn our little Zoom camera right now and show you the wall I'm looking at has all 10 episodes sort of beaten out in index cards. It's sort of an organizer's wet dream in a way, because it's so, it's a thing of beauty. It will never come down. It's so beautiful. And I figured out all 10 episodes and I wrote the first one. And then I made a pitch deck with Eric Allen, who designed your beautiful logo. And I had a meeting. I had met with the head of a studio in the UK when he was here in LA. Friends introduced us and he loved it. And they'd done a lot of quality things. Absolutely loved it. My God, I hadn't written it yet, but write it, send it to us. This sounds right up our alley. And then COVID hit. And then he was in the ICU in London. And then when he emerged, just the whole landscape of entertainment had changed. No one knew what to do, what it was going to look like. Budgets, agendas were all up in the air. And it kind of stayed that way for quite a long time. I kept, you know, talking about it with my agents, and they sent it to this person and that person. But, you know, everything's changed in entertainment in such a wild way in the last few years and still evolving. It's very risk averse. It's always about money. It's always, you know, the common denominator. And this is a tricky one. I think it's, you know, it's absolutely something I want to watch, and it's sort of timeless. It's not about a bunch of, you know.
I mean, I'm feeling like I'm supposed to tell you that this is still a work in progress and it's going to happen.
Okay. I feel that too.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, cool. It was very clear when you were talking about it before. Just like, oh, it's just, don't give up hope. It's still on its way.
Thanks. Yeah.
It's coming.
Well, I keep it alive, you know.
Yeah, but there's a lot of other people who want it to be made too. It's not just you.
Yeah. Oh, great. Thanks. Yeah. And you know, it's funny. It's in researching that, so many other stories. I mean, behind me on the wall, excuse me, I have all these title pages of projects and note cards of ideas, a lot of them within the classical music world, but aren't necessarily from the 1800s. You know, they're kind of current, cool retellings of it. And a lot of them have sort of a, let's call it a supernatural or paranormal bent to it. And so, yeah, you know, I'm hoping...
Yeah,
that this moves forward just to open the door. Yeah, it's cool.
It is very cool.
Well, when you have the support of both sides, someone recently, actually, in one of the sit-ups, I think, right? Sarah said that You want to share what they said about our little podcast?
Well, it's just that they're gathering, you know, on the other side's gathering around, and it's fully supportive, and it's almost like the audience is there on the other side. You're excited to participate. Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of feel that with your project.
That's what exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I want to say, that I feel the mirroring, like what they said was that the other side is gathering and this side too, but to be patient. And that's what I'm hearing too about yours, is that there's like really big players, pun intended, involved over there. And they just need to kind of get through. And it's been noisy here. It's been real noisy here. But again, that is what we're kind of really promoting and inviting, is like for people, for like, that was so cute, mere mortals, like all of us are mere mortals, but like, how do we invite with discernment that spark and that channel, and then the right people with the money, and for crying out loud, there's so much money, are going to find it and find you and it's all going to be.
When I had, for the longest time, while I was focused on trying to get this Ram Schumann thing going, every time I went to the car, I mean, like an absurd amount of time. I have a few classical music nerdy stations I listened to, Sirius Radio or whatever. It was a Brahms sonata. It was a Schumann piece. Always. And I would take pictures. On my phone, I must have a thousand photos. I said, I got to take a picture of this so I can tell someone one day. And I mean, always, I'd be thinking about it, be talking about it, and I'd turn on the car and it's playing, you know? And a lot of times, like something I incorporated that day, a piece that day, it was... And I could be like, thank, yes, we're on the same team.
We're on the same wavelength.
I'll take it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's just proof that you're on the right track. You're in the flow. When you get those signs that keep showing up like that, it's like, okay, yep, I'm doing the right thing. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. I mean, I didn't have to just say Brahms there.
Right. But look.
Of course you did. Of course you said that. That was so crazy.
Wow. Well, I think we need to start thinking about closing, but this is so much fun. It's hard to... No!
Don't do it!
There's so many more things to talk about.
This will be your podcast's only 5-hour episode. Let's go for it.
Yeah,
well, we have so much more to discuss. Come back, Adam.
Oh, thanks. We only scratched the surface, which happens in all your interviews I found. Every 5 seconds is a new subject for a podcast.
Totally.
It's really fun.
It's so sweet. And, you know, and before we close, I'll just add that, you know, as we were talking about this week, I was like, well, you know, we do really turn it over to spirit. We just sort of say like, y'all drive. We'll just hang out and talk into microphones. And that's what I love, is like, sometimes even as editing and replaying it, I'm like, whoa, I didn't even hear that, or I didn't even know that. So that sort of speaks to what we were talking about earlier. Like, it's layered.
I'm pretty sure that Brahms and Schumann showed up for this one.
100%. Maybe. I have an image in my head. I'm going to have to look and see what they look like.
Yeah. Go check it out. Yeah. I mean, I felt Brahms. So whoosh.
Yeah. When she gets whooshed, it's real, dude. You gotta trust her whoosh.
I'd be really curious, Sarah, if you were able to tap into a personality trait. Why he's so cinematic? A bit of a prankster. He was irreverent. He was very studious, but sort of isolated socially sometimes. But he could be a charmer. He covered so many bases. But he was a funny. He was a funny person too. So I don't know if that playful.
I'm gonna close with this. I think he was really curious.
Uh-huh. Nice. Sarah's Nicely the queen done. Of the clothes, man. She's our
Nicely
closer.
Done.
Love.
All right.
Well, Adam Barr, thank you for coming.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you both. You're awesome.
You're awesome. And thank you for helping us crack the beginning of the creative code. And we will see you again real soon.
More to come. Much success. Talk to you later.
Bye. Thanks. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Medium Curious is made possible
by Jane Morgan Editing.
Sarah Rathke made the amazing music.
And Gigi Hawkins Podcast Consulting.
Mix by Podcast Engineers. Our logo was created by Eric Allen.
Kyle Hansen McKee Photography.
And the dogs under the desk in Hawaii are Kalea and Domino.
And Trixie in California.